is the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. Congressman Peter DeFazio is going to join us in about a half hour. Sheriff Richard Mack will be with us next hour of the Oath Keepers movement. And Dick Cavett will be with us in our third hour. It's going to be an interesting day. I'd like to start out, though, with what's going on in Congress right now. In about 2 hours, we are going to, in all probability, I mean, who knows? This is when it's, the vote is scheduled at 2 o'clock Eastern time today. For the House of Representatives to vote on a $1+ trillion appropriation bill to keep the government from shutting down tonight. And there's a story and then there's a larger story. And the larger story is not at all being told in the corporate media in the United States. And the smaller story is, you know, driving the news cycle to a certain extent, but the bigger story behind that, nobody's talking about. And that's what I want to talk about today. So let me start with the small story, the one that all the media is talking about. This piece of legislation, I just got an email from Senator Sanders, you know, from his, I mean, I subscribe to his newsletter, right? So you probably got one too if you've been over to sanders.senate.gov and signed up for his newsletter. And he says, the Senate today advanced a Department of Defense bill that would authorize $560 billion for the military. The vote was 85 to 14. Sanders voted no. He said, at a time when our national debt is more than $18 trillion and we spend nearly as much on defense as the rest of the world combined, the time is long overdue to end the waste and financial mismanagement that have plagued the Pentagon for years. Okay, so that's the defense appropriation bill in the Senate. Now, over in the House, this so-called Cromnibus bill, this thing has a bunch of little sweetheart provisions in it, which is the larger story, how they got there, which I will get to in just a second. With, for example, and this is from the District Sentinel. This is the District Sentinel is a new news site on the interwebs and certainly worth bookmarking. Sam Sachs is one of the guys who helped put this thing together. Sam was he was a producer for our TV show for several years. Good guy I've worked with for years. And in fact, he worked as an editor on the crash of 2016. Sam knows his way around this town. So here's a piece. I'm not sure if Sam wrote this or somebody else over at DistrictSentinel.com, as in the District of Columbia, the Sentinel, you know, as in the Watcher, DistrictSentinel.com. But the headline is, "Surprise Right-Wing Aggressive Fantasies Undermine Budget Talks." Page 1599 of the 1,603-page bill guts the rules of McCain-Feingold. It'll increase tenfold the amount of money that billionaires, and this is purely for billionaires. I mean, anybody who's going to write a check for $230,000 is probably not even a millionaire. They might be a multimillionaire, like they might be worth hundreds of millions, but they're probably not worth a million or maybe even 10 million, because that's still a hell of a lot of money. But for somebody who's a billionaire, that's chump change. This is like, you know, the stuff that you find under the couch between the cushions, you know, for these guys. Barnett Naylor of Public Citizen points out there's another change. Now, that's a McCain-Feingold change. Then there is a Dodd-Frank change. And that's changing what's called margin requirements. As Elizabeth Warren said, this was negotiated behind closed doors, literally written by Citigroup lobbyists. In fact, here's Elizabeth Warren describing one of the provisions in this bill. Again, this is the smaller story. Here's Elizabeth Warren. Wrong one. That's the wrong one, too. There we
After
go.
The financial crash, we said to these big financial institutions, you've got to take the riskiest part of your trading, separate it out, so that if it explodes, when it explodes, it's not going to take down the insured part of the business, the deposits that are insured by FDIC insurance. And that provision has been in Dodd-Frank all along. Everybody has adjusted to it. But what happens now in the spending bill is they just repeal that provision, which means that the taxpayers ultimately will be on the hook if they get out there, engage in derivatives trading, and it blows up the entire financial institution or the entire economy.
Right. Right. So, you know, here's the net-net. If the legislators had written this for you and me, because as I said, this was, according to Senator Warren, this was literally written by a Citigroup lobbyist. And it's in a piece of legislation that John Boehner is going to bring to the floor of the House today for a vote. Presumably it'll still be there. Now, Nancy Pelosi has said, Mr. Boehner, please remove that. We'll see. But this is, you know, one of those moments when it's entirely appropriate to call 202-225-3121, or you can go to on the web, callcongress.org, and there's some toll-free numbers as well as that phone number I just gave you, the congressional switchboard line here in Washington, D.C., that gets you to an operator, and then you just say, I'd like to talk to, you know, fill in the blank. Who's your member of the House of Representatives? Who are your two senators? There's three people here in Washington, D.C., in all probability, that you can call and say, no. Are you kidding? You want to give the banksters another opportunity to gamble? I mean, the metaphor that's being made and the analogy that's being made and was made by Elizabeth Warren, by the way, that clip was from Rachel Maddow's show last night on MSNBC. The analogy that has been made is that that the banks, with their gambling and investments, are gambling. I mean, quite literally, you're betting that this is going to go up. You're hoping it doesn't go down. That the banks, with their gambling, are sort of like you and me going to Las Vegas. But the fact of the matter is that, you know, before the Reagan Revolution, a lot of people in this country had pensions. And by the way, there's also a piece in this bill that allows employers to cut back pensions to people who have already retired. Are you living on a pension? John Boehner wants the company that is writing the checks for your pension to be able to cut the amount that you get. That's in this bill, too. Might be a good idea to call your members of Congress and say, hell no. Or, you know, actually do it a little more respectfully than that. But here's the big picture. Right, here's the big story behind all this. How did this stuff get in here? Alex Ellefson writing over on Alternet, the headline, sweet deal, corporations get $760 from the government for every dollar they spend on elections. This is a report that was issued last month by the Sunlight Foundation. It says that for every dollar the nation's most politically active companies spent on political influence, they receive $760 from the government in the form of federal business and support. 200 of the country's top campaign donors spent $5.8 billion between 2007 and 2012 and received a whopping $4.4 trillion in return. Seriously, 29 companies received 1,000 times more money than they spent on contributions and lobbying. 102 companies received 10 times more money than they spent, and 138 companies saw a financial return that was greater than their investment. The biggest beneficiaries, banks. Second, weapons manufacturers like Lockheed Martin, which spent $8.4 million in contributions, $84 million in lobbying, and got $332 billion in federal business and support. So that's the real story. Is that the Supreme Court with Citizens United has allowed these big corporations to buy our legislators. They're doing that, and the legislators then are just selling us all out. This is anti-democratic, anti-republican.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
With a small d and a small r. These are violations of the founding principles of our republic. And welcome back. Mike, watching Free Speech TV in Fair Oaks, California. Hey, Mike, what's on your mind?
Good morning, Mr. Hartman. I'm watching the debate this morning, and Mr. Tom Cole on the Republican side, I cannot believe that he is making some of the statements he's making. it's apparent to me finally that fascism is about ready to make a move with people as weak and as either misinformed or informed by others to manipulate the people within that body.
Right.
It is really a sad moment for me, knowing what's in this bill and knowing where we are. And I find myself supporting a government shutdown at this point.
Yeah. I am supporting anything but the above, right? Anything but what these bought off members of Congress, this totally bought and paid for Republican House of Representatives are promoting. It's just astonishing. And apparently there's, you know, some 30, 40, 50, maybe as many as 80 conservative Republicans who are going to vote against this because it doesn't trash President Obama hard enough, which is bizarre. And so they're going to have to get an roughly equal number of Democratic votes in order to pass this out of the House. And Boehner has never tried to do that before. He's always followed the Hastert rule. But it's truly bizarre. And apropos of your description of fascism, Mike, the old American Heritage Dictionary definition of fascism, which I've used in so many of my books, is fascism is the merger of corporate and state interests combined with belligerent nationalism. Now, if you watched Dick Cheney last night or on Sunday, of course, if it's Sunday, it's Meet the Republicans. So on Meet the Republicans on NBC, you will see Dick Cheney on Sunday, barfing his rationalizations for war crimes and the destruction of America's reputation all over the television news without rebuttal and without challenge, I predict and guarantee. But yeah, that's Mike, that's absolutely what's going on. And that's why we need to amend the Constitution to get money out of politics. You know, I don't know a strategy beyond that. Do you have a suggestion, Mike?
I can only say at this point, I'm 70 years old, and I crawled out of the jungle in Vietnam after being drafted. I'm going to have to go back in the streets, obviously. And there's a lot of young people in my family who are realizing the same thing.
Yeah.
It's time for action, and I've been tagged, and I appreciate your voice.
Okay. Thank you. Mike, thank you very much for the call, and thanks for your kind words. This is a monumental moment. This is, and there's more coming, by the way. The next 2 years are going to be fascinating. The next 2 months are going to be fascinating. This is a really critical time for American democracy, though, because in 2010, when the Supreme Court ruled in Citizens United that corporations can throw all the money at politicians they want, they are persons after all, and that money is considered political speech, so it can't be limited, when they ruled that, they wrote the death sentence to a democratic republic. We'll be back. It's 20 minutes past the hour. So with regard to this omnibus spending bill, or cromnibus spending bill, because part of it only runs until February, so they'll be able to beat up President Obama in February when the when the Republicans take over the Senate as well as the House. Right. So the metaphor that is made is that the banks are gambling. We're covering their losses. If they make a profit, they keep the profit. If they lose, then we pay the loss. That's the metaphor. And it's an apt metaphor. But nobody would suggest that the federal government should backstop all of us if we went to Las Vegas. So, because I think that kind of pushes the boundaries of an appropriate metaphor. So here's what I think is an appropriate metaphor. If you have a 401k or any reinvestment at all, any kind of retirement investment funds, and most Americans have something. Actually, about a third of Americans have something. It might just be $500 in a savings account, but whatever it is, if you've got, but in particular, if you've got some money invested in the stock market or the bond market, which, by the way, is much safer right now than the stock market, if you've got money invested in gold, whatever it may be, you've got some money invested. If this piece of legislation protected you and me the same way it protects Jamie Dimon and Citigroup and Bank of America and all these guys, it would mean that if your retirement account, say you got $10,000 in your retirement account and it goes up to $10,300, you know, it goes up 3%, you get to keep the $300 and the $10,000. But let's say that the market has a hiccup or a crash or something, and that $10,000 becomes $9,000. Well, under these rules that were written by Citigroup, by a lobbyist for them, under these rules, if they apply to you and me, and your investment, your financial retirement fund at $10,000 fell down to $9,000, the federal government would cut you a check for $1,000, make it up to you. They would do it out of a fund called the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, the FDIC. They would write you a check to make you whole. Now, do you see that happening? Do you see anybody suggesting, hey, you know, let's make sure everybody's investments are protected? No. The only investments that they want to protect are those from about 7 banks in the United States. How much money did they have to spread around to get this? It almost doesn't matter, because we're talking about, if they can get government backstopping, if they can get the federal government to guarantee their derivatives trading, we're talking about hundreds of billions of dollars in derivatives. You're talking about tens of billions of dollars in profits. And the profit will radically go up once they can say this is an FDIC-insured investment. I mean, it'll radically go up. So if you're talking about tens of billions of dollars in profit, spending a couple of million dollars on a few politicians is chump change. It's nothing. And that's the essential problem that we have in America right now. We have the best government money can buy. And that's the tragedy, is when you try to have a government that's the best money government money can buy, it's going to be a damn poor government. And it's not just things like the omnibus bill. Did you see this thing in North Carolina? This is Caitlin McNeil writing over at TalkingPointsMemo.com. The North Carolina Department of Public Instruction last week encouraged high school teachers to use a history curriculum drafted by a group funded by the Koch brothers. Now, how did this happen? Well, back in 2011, somebody dropped a whole money bomb on a bunch of Republican congressmen in North Carolina, and they passed a law requiring public schools to offer a history course called Founding Principles. Now, this is model legislation that came out of ALEC. They're trying to do this in states all over the country. North Carolina was just the first. So now the schools in the state have to teach this course called Founding Principles. Where do they get that course? Well, just by coincidence, from the Bill of Rights Institute. The state of North Carolina hired this group called the Bill of Rights Institute to write the curriculum. Who funds the Bill of Rights Institute? The Koch brothers. So what's the curriculum about? Well, the curriculum is about how, you know, the founders really didn't want a big government. They didn't want government to do things like regulate polluters and oil barons and, you know, that kind of thing. You know, Obamacare really is not all that constitutional. It's really extraordinary. So if you've got enough money now in America, you can get a law passed in your state that says that every school child in your state has to take a course based on a book that you yourself wrote that rewrites the history of the United States. And it just happened in North Carolina. Coming soon to a state near you. This is the corrosive effect of money in politics. This is what Senator Sanders is talking about when he says we are becoming an oligarchy rather than a democratic republic. When oligarchs can literally buy a state legislature, and not just one, but many, when they can buy a state legislature and then they could, and then they can get that legislature to buy a history curriculum from them, you no longer have a democracy. And by the way, I just started some of the things about this Cromnibus bill that you need to know about. They're going to cut IRS enforcement funding by $135 million, so tax cheats get off well. They're going to cut back on the budget for the Commodity Futures Trading Commission. It's $65 million less than what the White House asked for. They're going to suspend regulations covering sleep of professional truckers. And they're going to take $300 million out of Pell Grant Fund from college students and give it to the banksters who are doing debt collection.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
Now is a really good time to call your member of the House of Representatives, 202-225-3121, and let them know what you think. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Congressman DeFazio may be calling in at any moment. We will see. They're still voting? Interesting. They're voting on something. So we'll find out. You know, it'll be from the horse's mouth. Charlie in Madison, Wisconsin. Hey, Charlie, what's up?
Hi. I just wanted to let you and anybody who's listening know that if they want to, their member of Congress, there's a really great app out there, should be required for citizenship, called Congress, put out by the Sunlight Foundation. It has a list of everybody's representative, their phone number, legislation that they sponsored or co-sponsored, all kinds of information in it.
Hmm. So if I go to the App Store, the Apple App Store in my case, I just type in Congress?
Yeah, and look for...
Or Congress and Sunlight?
Right.
Because it's from the Sunlight Foundation. Cool.
Right. And,
okay.
And really useful thing. And one other thing, if I could.
Sure.
Why don't we start calling net neutrality internet freedom?
That's a great suggestion. That's a great suggestion. The thing that I find so astonishing is that Comcast, which is under a court order to maintain net neutrality, is running ads right now on MSNBC and NBC talking about how much they love net neutrality, when in fact they're just, you know, they're under court order, as if my understanding of this is correct. Charlie, thank you for the suggestion. It's a great one. Mark in San Francisco. Hey, Mark, what's up?
Yeah, Tom, I've been on the phone with Congressman Pelosi and also Dianne Feinstein and Boxer in my area, screaming about this plan to cut pensions,
right,
and also the Dodd-Frank repeal are unacceptable. And I don't know if Bernie Sanders can filibuster this, if he has a chance to, but I sure hope he does, because this is a Pearl Harbor on the middle class today.
Yeah, it's going to take 60 votes in the Senate to pass, and we'll see. We'll see if this toxic sludge coming out of the Republican House of Representatives makes it into and through the Senate. Time will tell. Good on you, though, for calling your three elected representatives, Mark. Thank you very much for the heads up on the call. Steve in Martinsville, Virginia. Hey, Steve, what's on your mind?
I'm just wondering, we use the tax code to encourage things we think are good, and we use it to discourage things we think are bad. Obviously, the EPA and the IRS fell in the later class of bad. What happened to the CIA's funding in this new bill they're trying to pass? Were they rewarded for their behavior or penalized?
We will never know, because that's part of the budget that doesn't see the light of day. But I guarantee you, I mean, if Senator Sanders just issued a press release saying that he voted no on the defense appropriation bill in the Senate, which is a separate piece of legislation from this Cromnibus thing. But if Bernie is saying that he voted no on that, then you can guess or bet or whatever that there's something pretty toxic in there. Steve, thank you for the call. Chris in Appleton, Wisconsin. Hey, Chris, what's up?
Hi. You were talking about how the Koch brothers are doing something with history curriculum in what state was that?
North Carolina. They, North Carolina. Yeah, yeah. The North Carolina legislature passed a law requiring a history classes be taught in North Carolina schools and mandating, apparently, that this organization funded by the Koch brothers write the curriculum. Can you imagine if it had been George Soros?
Well, right, but, like, Common Core and the software used in that was really funded by Bill Gates and Microsoft.
Right.
And he's going to be making a killing from that software sales to the schools. And I haven't really heard that topic talked about.
It's, you know, it's all part of the same fabric. The 1974 Merriam-Webster dictionary definition of the word fascism. Chris, thank you for the call. Fascism is the merger of corporate and state interests combined with belligerent nationalism. And actually, let me. Congressman Peter DeFazio is on the line with us. Hey, Congressman. Congressman DeFazio.
Hello.
Hello, Congressman DeFazio. You are on the air. The Democrat from Oregon's 4th district.
Be careful here. Wow.
Yeah. Very, very good. So what's going on? DeFazio.house.gov is the website, of course. Congressman, what is going on with this piece of legislation where they want to backstop the banks so that if they gamble and lose, we pick up the tab. But if you or I gamble and lose in our 401ks, we just get screwed.
Yep. You got it. Well, it's another example of the Republicans breaking their promises to the American people. We have a bill that funds the entire government, the United States of America, full of miscellaneous riders that was just made available yesterday, voted on today. Then they held the vote open for an extraordinarily long period of time to strong-arm a lame duck, unelected Republican into changing his vote and a couple of other Republicans into changing their vote so they could prevail by a two-vote margin. And as you pointed out, you know, this would allow the Wall Street banks to gamble in the riskiest of derivatives, those that brought down the economy in 2008, with deposit-insured money. That is money that people have deposited what they thought was a commercial bank, but actually is a Wall Street gambling firm. And but don't worry, if they lose all the money, they expect a taxpayer bailout. So this is going to allow them to use taxpayer-insured deposits in their gambling.
Now, I thought the vote for this was scheduled for 2 o'clock this afternoon. Are you saying it's already passed?
The rule to allow the bill to come up passed, and I think that was the critical vote.
Which means the time to amend it has passed.
Yeah, they brought up the bill under a rule, and if we had defeated the rule, we could have amended it. Now it's an up or down vote on the bill, but I think that's an indication that the bill itself will pass, probably by a larger margin than two votes.
Wow.
I've been around here a long time. That's just my prediction. I hope I'm wrong.
Yeah. What can we do?
I don't know. Get out the pitchforks and the torches. March. I don't know. It's absolutely outrageous, but... You know, they've got the American people snookered. I mean, you look at the last election, heck of a lot of people voted Republican who I think would be outraged at the idea that they are giving the Wall Street banks, the opportunity to once again tank our economy and to once again get totally bailed out by the taxpayers. I thought that was sort of the foundation, that, of course, in Obamacare for the Tea Party, but, I don't know. You know,
Well, there's also this piece in this legislation that says that companies that are paying pensioners right now can start dialing back the amount of money they're giving. This so-called pension reform, they can cut existing, you know, pensions. People who are getting pensions right now. Do I have that right?
Well, that's George Miller, who is a great advocate of labor and pensions and everything else, argued in favor of that. The problem is, Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation is split between two funds. One fund is called the Multi-Employer Fund, and there are a few huge multi-employer plans on the verge of bankruptcy, Central Teamsters and a couple others, and the fund itself is on the verge of bankruptcy. So there are already people getting guaranteed pensions from PBGC, Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation. Prospect is it all goes bluey unless the Republicans would bail it out. So George and others who are great advocates of labor argued in favor of that provision. There were other egregious things. They gratuitously cut Pell Grants by $300 million. They cut some transportation investments by $100 million. They're going to allow billionaires to contribute over $3 million a year to the political party of their choice, and you can bet most of the time that's going to be the Republican Party because that's who put it in the bill.
Right.
So there's a lot. I mean, who knows what else is in there? That's just the tip of the iceberg of the bad stuff.
Wow. Do you think that this will be a challenged in the Senate and come back for reconciliation, or is this going to happen? You're laughing?
Jeez. Yeah, no. The Senate will be on the way out the door when this bill comes over.
Yeah, so
never a bulwark. In fact, even Elizabeth Warren said, well, the House has got to do its job and stop this bill. Well, we're not in the majority. The Democrats nominally are in the Senate still. If somebody can stop it, it should be them.
That's right. So, wow, that's pretty bleak. This correct me if I'm wrong, it seems to me that this is just a pretty clear consequence of Citizens United and Buckley versus Vallejo and this whole series of Supreme Court decisions that have said that basically you too can buy a politician.
Well, come on, Tom, think bigger than that. You're not just buying a politician, you're buying
an entire Congress,
government,
or an entire political party.
One branch of government thus far. They're going to work on the other branch in 16.
Well, this is the Sunlight Foundation just released this report that the most politically active companies, these 200 politically active companies in America, spent $5.8 billion in campaign contributions between 2007 and 2012 and made $4.4 trillion in government benefits. That, and for
that's a pretty good return on investment.
It is. It's horrifying. Anyhow, Congressman Peter DeFazio. Yeah, thanks for dropping by and giving us the inside skinny. I appreciate it.
Hey, thanks, Tom.
Always great talking with you. We'll be back. I'd say it's still not too late to call your member of Congress and express your concerns, shall we say, if that's the case. 15 minutes before the end.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
We'll be back in just a second here. Welcome back. 15 minutes before the hour. Rick in Erwin, Tennessee. Hey, Rick, what's up? Thanks for watching Free Speech TV on the Dish Network.
How you doing, bro?
Good. What's on your mind?
Hey, listen, a while back I called in. I mentioned something about corporations in Hong Kong being able to vote, and you kind of poo-pooed that. I looked it up. They're called functional constituencies. There's one
really?
Guy. There's one guy. His name's Robert N.G. is his last name, and he's in charge of a group called the Sino Group, and he has a vote that is geographically equivalent to over 15,000 people.
Wow. So Hong Kong set up a system of governance where corporations actually have a vote. This is what Mussolini did in Italy in 1934. He dissolved parliament, and he replaced it with what was called the Cameo di Fascio Corporaciones, for my terrible Italian, the Chamber of Fascist Corporations. And in each congressional district, the largest corporation, the largest company in that district, sent their representative, and that became parliament. And that was, and then Mussolini in the Italian dictionary, he said this is fascism, and the definition of fascism is the merger of corporate and state interests combined with belligerent nationalism. The belligerent nationalism part got added by Merriam-Webster, but Mussolini himself defined it as the merger of corporate and state interests.
Yeah, you know what I was thinking, that with these rulings about making corporations people and stuff like that, maybe they were headed towards that. But I don't think they'd be satisfied with just 15,000 votes. So what we really have now is a de facto functional constituency, and one or two or three or whatever four billionaires are running the whole country because they got one party that does whatever they say.
Yeah. Well, and people on the other side would argue the same thing on the other side. It's a broken system, not just a broken party. It's a broken system, and the Supreme Court broke it. Rick, thank you for the call. Leonard in South Pasadena, California. Hey, Leonard, what's up?
Well, I'd just like to wonder, how is it that a group of people can be considered one person? How is that possible? And it also appears that the wealthy are like children. They're just trying to find their boundaries. They're grabbing as much as they can. It's up to us as parents, it appears, to let them know that this is not the case. I mean, we work for them. We make their products. We help them with their services. And then we buy everything, too. We are the ones who gave them the money. It's up to us to decide. We must organize. And then we can actually start attacking companies one at a time, the companies that don't comply with us, and then just buy them out.
I think, you know, I think you just do this by law. When Dwight Eisenhower was president, Leonard, thank you for the call. Dwight Eisenhower was a good Republican. And when he was president of the United States, roughly a third of the federal budget came from corporate taxes. Right now it's 8%. What made up the difference? You and me. You know, Ronald Reagan doubled the tax on working people who make less than $30,000 a year. He passed 18 increases in taxes on people making less than $70,000 a year, and he cut the top tax rate on people making more than $1 million a year from 74% down to 28%. That, you know, here we are, right? And then on top of that, you get Citizens United and all this other stuff, all this massive deregulation of corporations and billionaires, and then you give them permission to buy politicians left, right, in between. It's crazy. We'll be back. Here it is. Ben in Wilmington, North Carolina. Hey, Ben, what's up? You're on the air.
Hey, Tom. How are you?
Good.
Good. I was calling in regards to the curriculum in the North Carolina schools that you said was devised and funded, basically, by the Koch brothers.
Right.
And I was wondering inside what their incentive would be and how they would get a return on their investment. And I'm wondering what you think about if they see the Republican Party as an older, whiter, male generation kind of dying off, and with the newer, younger, liberal generation coming up, they feel like they may have to kind of come in from below and maybe try to re-educate people who aren't even of voting age yet to kind of have a Republican mentality to compete with the upcoming liberal generation. Do you think there's any of that going on?
I think there's a lot of that going on. I think that's the essence of what's going on. The curriculum that the Koch brothers are promoting in North Carolina, now all across the United States through ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, suggests it completely deletes the history of protest in the United States. This is a country that was founded on a revolution. Ben, thank you for the call. We were literally founded on a revolution. We said no to the largest corporation on earth, the British East India Company. The Boston Tea Party in the fall of 1773 was the opening of the American Revolution. It was $1 million in today's dollars, $1 million act of vandalism against the world's largest corporation that essentially owned the government of the United Kingdom. And it was in response to a tax bill called the Tea Act of 1773 that more than cut in half the taxes to the British East India Company on tea that they had already paid taxes on that was in their warehouse, 13 million pounds of tea in their warehouses in Great Britain. So essentially it was this giant tax rebate to the British East India Company. Why did that, you know, anger the American patriots? Well, because there was a tea shop on virtually every block in the United States. It was the national drink. And more than half of the tea coming in the United States was, quote, smuggled into the United States. It was brought in by groups who were bringing it from the Dutch trading companies or bringing it in themselves directly from tea producing countries. And the East India Company saw that as competition. So they get this giant tax break and they start bringing tea in. The reason that these guys threw this tea in the harbor is because that tea was destined to sell at half the price, half the market price of tea in the rest of the United States. The British East India Company was about to do a Walmart. Every time a Walmart opens in any community in the United States, on average, 140 businesses go out of business in the first 5 years. They were going to come in and wipe out all their small competitors. And the good citizens of Boston said, no, we're not going to stand for this. America was founded in a revolt against a corporate tax break by a captive government. And that's not part of the curriculum. the idea that people, you know, fighting for their rights, whether it's African Americans, whether it's women, whether you fill in the blanks. Right, left, in between, people stand. No, we don't. That's not going to be part of our curriculum. We have to respect authority. Respect authority is a dangerous concept. You need to challenge authority. And again, that's what this country was founded on. Go back and read, Alex. I should have printed it out and marked it up. I don't have it right in front of me right now, but you can easily find it on the internet. Alexander Hamilton's 11-point program on manufacturers. It's called Alexander Hamilton's Report on Manufacturers of the United States Congress of 1793. In 1791, President Washington asked Alexander Hamilton to come up with a way to build this country. Hamilton did. It took him 2 years. He presented it to Congress in 1793, and virtually all of it passed. And it was things like raise import tariffs, support domestic industries that are vital industries. I mean, this is an 11-point thing. In my book, Rebooting the American Dream, you can read the entire thing. But he starts out with this long screed about the welfare clause. Alexander Hamilton, who was in the room when they wrote the Constitution, goes through this long screed about, you know, why did we say that this Constitution was written to promote the general welfare? Why in Article 1, Section 8 do we begin and end Article 1, Section 8 with a discussion of the general welfare? Because, Alexander Hamilton said, because we can't predict what the future is going to bring, and we want this government to have the ability to do whatever its people thinks it needs. Read it. But the Koch brothers would really rather, you know, they and other giant corporations and industrialists that say, you know, we really would rather not have to pay to clean up our smokestacks. We'd rather, you know, people paid for that with cancer and things. Anyhow, Victor in Pittsburgh, Missouri. Hey, Victor, what's up? Victor? No Victor. Anita in San Antonio, Texas. Hey, Anita, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Yeah, I think the only thing that will stop this will be a veto. The Senate, from what I understand, can delay it, you know, one senator.
Right.
But because it's
for 3 days,
it can't be filibustered.
Yeah. Yeah, it's and a veto would then, in effect, President Obama would be shutting down the government.
Yeah, but he would be differentiating himself. If he gets his message out that what this is all about and why he's doing it, this could be a good thing because it could differentiate what he stands for, what the Democratic Party stands for, and what the Republicans are trying to do.
Right. Yeah, it would draw a clear contrast. It's just I don't think most Americans pay attention to these kind of things. Good point, though, Anita. Thank you for the call. Steve, we've got a little less than a minute here before the hour is out. You had a quick point you wanted to make. Thanks for listening to WCPT in Chicago.
Well, actually, you stole my thunder with regard to, you know, this new interpretation of American history is going to be very selective. I doubt, seriously doubt, that it's going to include Jefferson's contention that you need to re-examine how government works about every 20 years, every generation.
Yeah, every 19 years is what Jefferson said. We need a revolution every 19 years.
Exactly. And the last point, you know, to some extent, there is a little bit of light here at the end of the tunnel. You know, if we give them enough rope, in 2016, they will hang themselves because people are not just going to sit by and allow this to happen. And we could see another sweep in the other direction in 2016 if the Republicans go too far. And I think they will.
Yeah, we'll see. Again, Steve, thank you for the call. I don't see this as a partisan problem. I mean, you've got one party that's entirely captured by one group. You've got another party that's well more than half captured. This is a systemic problem. This is not the United States as envisioned by the people who founded it and the people who have fought and died in war after war to keep it going. It's an oligarchy. It's not a republic.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey, friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com. Providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. and EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartmann.com.
This is the Tom Hartmann Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartmann here with you. And Sheriff Richard Mack is in the studio with us, former Arizona sheriff in Graham County. He's a member of the board of directors of the Oath Keepers Movement, oathkeepers.org, and he's with the Constitutional Sheriffs and Peace Officers Association. The website for that is cspoa.org. You can tweet him at Sheriff Mack. And Sheriff Mack, great to see you.
And if any of your listeners want to email me, just email me at sheriffmack@hotmail.com.
Okay.
Go ahead. Respond all you want. And we want every one of your listeners to become a member of CSPOA. Just do that at cspoa.org.
So you don't have to be a police officer to join?
No, anybody can join.
Okay. All right. I was going off on a lot of things in the last segment. You were
getting me
here.
Wild.
I know. You're sitting here going, okay, I want to talk about this. Big government, bad government, small government.
Wait a minute. And I got to go back to DeFazio.
Sure.
Okay. Come on. I mean, this whole game about, oh, the Democrats are good and the Republicans are bad. And, you know, I will admit I'm a registered Republican, but I assail Republicans and Democrats alike. And the reason that Washington, D.C. is so corrupt and ineffective is because both major parties do exactly what you were complaining about, the Republicans. Your listeners, same thing, the callers that call in. Come on, quit playing the game of, oh, the Democrats are a little bit better than the Republicans, so we like them, and they're not as corrupt. And
This is the problem.
It is
for every dollar that a corporation or a billionaire invests in our government, they get $760 back.
On both sides.
On both sides.
And
I agree.
And Tom, this is the other
thing. This came from the Supreme Court. And it's a clear violation.
They're corrupt, too.
They are the cancer at the core of the whole damn thing.
Yeah.
Article 3, Section 2 of the United States Constitution says that the Supreme Court shall be limited in two ways. They shall operate under regulation of Congress.
Right.
Regulation.
Right.
And secondly, that let me actually find it here. It's just,
well, and another one, they're not allowed to make law. The Supreme Court cannot make laws.
Here it is. The Supreme Court shall have appellate jurisdiction both as to laws and to fact with such exceptions and under such regulations as Congress shall make.
Yeah.
So Congress passes a law.
That's the check and balance.
Right. Congress passes a law that says billionaires can't buy politicians.
Mm-hmm.
John McCain championed this, McCain-Feingold. Right. They pass a law saying we're going to stop billionaires from buying politicians. The Supreme Court says, no, we're going to ignore that. We're going to blow that law up. Where'd they get that right? I mean, I've had Phyllis Schlafly on the show once or twice a year. She drops by. I've known Phyllis for years. And, you know, she always goes back to Roe v. Wade. You know, that was an abomination. The Supreme Court made law. Yes, I totally agree. It should not have been done that way.
Right.
Similarly, Citizens United, the Supreme Court should not be doing that. They have, and Buckley versus Vallejo, they shouldn't have done it. They are writing law, and the laws that they're writing are laws that hand power over to very wealthy, very powerful interests. And whether that's a union or whether that's, a couple of oil billionaires, it bothers me. It concerns me.
I will tell you one time the Supreme Court got it right.
What was that?
In my case.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And I want everybody to remember that. I'm the only sheriff in history to sue the federal government and win a landmark decision. And what Scalia wrote the decision, and a lot of times I don't like Scalia either, but what Scalia did is he just did a history lesson and he enforced the Constitution, which is what the Supreme Court is supposed to do. They have to comply with the Constitution, whether they like it or not.
Right.
And so does the president. Of course, you know, he's not going to either, but Congress will not comply with the Constitution. The White House will not comply with the Constitution. And that's the reason we're in such a huge mess today.
So what part of the Constitution do you think that is not being complied with or needs to be enforced? Here is the Constitution itself.
Well, we could start with the First Amendment and go through all five principles of that one. They do not respect freedom of speech. They do not respect.
How?
Okay. How about at the Bundy Ranch and other places when there's protesters, they say you can protest as long as you do it in this corral that we made over here.
Right.
You can wave your signs only in that 25-foot corral.
I agree with you, Tom. Free speech.
Hey, corral.
Free speech zones. No, I'm with you. You know, free speech zones go back to the Reagan administration, only they got really big during the Clinton administration, and they got huge during the George W. Bush administration. And I agree. They are totally unconstitutional.
And this excuse that other presidents did it or other Republicans did it, so it's okay for Obama to do it,
right?
I don't buy any of that. My mom used to spank me or put me in a corner if I ever said, well, everybody else is doing it.
Right. It's no excuse.
And it's absolutely, it's stupid and it's immature and it's wrong. And so for all the Democrats that come out with these excuses, oh, well, the founding fathers are a bunch of white guys and they hated women and they were racist and, you know, they had no vision. And for them to believe in the Second Amendment, well, that was for muskets and, you know, all of that stupidity like that. People who don't read and understand what the founding fathers said about the Second Amendment. And you asked about what parts of the Constitution aren't being followed? You can just go down the Bill of Rights. Every principle. Freedom of religion? They don't care about that. The IRS.
You're right. They're trying to impose religion on us.
They are.
Yeah.
And
this is a Christian country.
And,
what?
And,
really?
Yeah, but
I never
but
heard
the, you have Democrats doing just the opposite. Obama is saying this is not a Christian nation. You know, he's done just
the
opposite.
We were not founded as a theocracy. We were not founded as a Christian nation.
No, as a theocracy, no. But
George
Washington and Thomas Jefferson ridiculed the idea. But on Christian principles, yes.
No, that's not true. We were founded on the principles of the Enlightenment. John Locke and Jean-Jacques Rousseau were the founders of this country, far more than Jesus Christ.
Well, if you read,
Washington's, render out of Caesar what is Caesar's.
That doesn't mean everything that Caesar asked for, we have to just bow down and give it to him, because this is not supposed to be an oligarchy. He is not a king, even though Obama thinks he is. But this is the whole issue. If you go down the list and you ask what parts of the Constitution, what parts do they hold sacred? None. And so, okay, the first part of the whole thing is Congress shall make no law. Then why is it required for a church to be a 501c3? Or you're not tax exempt unless you bow down to the IRS.
But wait a second.
Why?
Wait a second. No, you're asking the question backwards. Why should you and I be subsidizing a church?
Well, if I pay tithing, that's my choice.
Right, but why should you and I be forced to subsidize a church? Because when a church is a nonprofit,
then why should I be forced to subsidize abortion, which I totally abhor?
I don't know any abortion clinics. Well, maybe they're run as nonprofits.
They get money
if they're
from
run as
the federal government.
If they're run as nonprofits, then, you know, have at it. Turn them into for-profit organizations. I don't have a problem with that.
But don't force me through my taxes to pay for them.
But when somebody claims nonprofit status,
I don't care.
We are subsidizing. No, you do care, because it's coming out of your tax dollars. Somebody has to pay for their police service. Somebody has to pay for their fire
service.
They
should pay for it.
But that's called taxes. Well, when they're tax exempt, they don't pay for it.
Well,
you and I do. You and I are paying for the roads in front of every church in this country. We're paying for the maintaining the electric lines. A church has a right to a road
just like any other citizen or group does.
And we all pay taxes for that, right?
Well, that a public service as far as roads, gasoline tax pays for those. We all pay for that equally.
I am, you know, to the extent that I support religion,
but I'm still
and
going
do.
Down the list that you
okay.
asked.
All right.
Freedom of religion is not respected by Congress or the White House. Either way, forcing me to believe something or forcing me to pay for abortions or forcing me to be 501c3, forcing churches to be 501c3, Congress shall make no law.
Respecting an establishment of religion.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They have to stay completely out. They cannot intermeddle with the principles of religion, period. They can't get involved.
I agree.
Okay. Then freedom of speech. No, as long as we do it how they say, they grant me a place to do freedom of speech.
How about freedom of the press?
Who in the media has got behind and supported Sherry, what's her name, Atkinson from CBS News, who was the one who broke Fast and Furious?
Yeah.
She's been attacked. She's had her computers hacked. She's been monitored by the government.
There is no independent media in this country, Richard.
But independence is one thing. But going after somebody who exposed the president and the Justice Department in supporting Fast and Furious, running guns down to Mexico. Do you know how many people were killed with those guns that went down to Mexico?
Yeah, no,
over 400 Mexicans.
When the Bush administration started that program, they made a big mistake.
Yeah.
I'm with you.
Yeah.
I mean, they never should have done it.
And
the Obama administration shouldn't have continued it.
That's right.
It was a disaster. Sheriff Richard Mack with us. The website is CSPOA, as in Constitutional Sheriffs and Peace Officers Association. And yes, membership is open to you, too. So, Sheriff Mack, thanks for dropping by today.
Hey, thank you.
Great talking to you. We'll be back 15 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Or take the calls. Thank you for dropping by. Oh, we'll be right back. Stick around. 15 minutes past. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Randall watching Free Speech TV on the Dish Network in Oceanside, California. You are on the air, Randall.
Yes, Tom. I want to backtrack a little bit here today and talk about your topic yesterday, pardoning Bush and Cheney.
Right. Yeah, I'm of the opinion that Bush and Cheney should be pardoned for torture, for the war crimes.
Yeah. First off is you can
you say no way, Richard? Sure. Arrest them. Yeah, I'm in favor of arresting them, but it's not going to happen. So if you pardon them, then you're labeling them as criminals.
No, you don't understand.
Yeah.
Cannot pardon them because it's a violation of the Constitution, Section 2, under presidential powers.
Because this is an impeachable offense?
Yes, sir.
Well, you know, the Congress has to determine what's an impeachable offense. Impeachable offenses are only defined as high crimes and misdemeanors. So...
You don't think this qualifies as a high crime? I mean, to think about the fact that this...
I think it does. You may think it does.
But to think that this was established during George Washington...
You want to come back on? Sheriff Mack, you want to come back on? Let's hang out for a while and talk about this. Keep going, Randall. Keep talking. Richard Mack is listening, too.
Okay, because it just seems to me that this is such an egregious. At the time it was happening, I was offended as an American, and my president does represent me, and I want him to be held accountable.
Right.
And not just through a pardon, a slap on the wrist in court.
Yeah, Sheriff Mack, your thoughts on that?
We did torture, and we're excusing it because we are claiming that we saved lives.
Right.
Oh. That's the only thing to justify breaking the law. If you can break any law and save lives, if
it just
saves
peace.
One life, yeah, killing for peace. That we would take America to that low level.
Yeah.
What makes us any different than the people who do torture in the Middle East or anyplace else?
It's like having sex to promote virginity.
Our cause is better. Our cause is more justified than theirs is. And that we lower ourselves to that level? Never. Not for my family and not for your family do we submit and lower ourselves to torturing any other human being ever. And then try to justify it that, oh, we saved lives. We were successful. That to me is absolute beyond feeling and beyond forgivable. And I think anybody involved in it, as I yelled out to you from the other room, should be held accountable criminally for it. I don't care if it's Bush or Cheney or Obama. I don't care. And yes, Obama should have known that this was happening, and he should have stood against it, and he should have stopped it way before now.
Well, apparently it was stopped in 2006, but it's, you know, and Obama issued an executive order in his first day in office, officially ending the program. But it's
well, that brings
stuff.
Up other one other point. The CIA,
thank you, Randall.
The CIA is out of control. They don't answer to anybody, and there is no oversight that really controls what they do. Not because the president said this is over in 2006. It didn't mean anything to them. Yeah. This agency answers unto themselves. They're almost as bad as the IRS. They do whatever they want, and they are accountable to no one.
It seems. And by the way, not just the CIA. Now it's the NSA. They're building this giant facility out in Utah. I mean, you know,
it's there. I've seen it.
The instruments, the mechanism of state oppression,
yeah,
is in place. We just haven't had a president who's pulled the trigger. I mean, all hysteria aside, I don't think Obama cared in state oppression. But we can continue that conversation in just a second. 20 minutes past the hour. Sheriff Richard Mack with us, and your calls as well. We'll be back. I just dragged Sheriff Richard Mack back into the chair here, former Arizona Sheriff of Graham County, Director of Board of Directors of Oath Keepers, and he's with the Constitutional Sheriffs and Peace Officers Association, CSPOA, and you just went off on torture.
Yes.
Now, we got Dick Cheney, you know, if it's Sunday, it's Meet the Republicans, right, on NBC. They're going to have to they call it Meet the Press, but it's for you. It's so funny, when Bush and Cheney were in power, they said, we have more Republicans as guests because they have power. Now, then you get President Obama in, and they say, we have more Republicans as guests because they're the opposition. But in any case, Dick Cheney is going to be on that show on Sunday telling us how wonderful everything is and that he's – I think this is all about securing the legacy of Bush and Cheney.
Well, I think that they've had Nancy Pelosi on there so much, and I find her so totally entertaining. I laugh so much every time she opens her mouth.
Yeah. But let's get back to torture.
Yeah, you're right, and we should. And America should never be involved in any of this.
Right.
And whoever is should be investigated. But who's going to control those investigations? Yeah, I mean, they reinvestigated the fiasco and murders at Waco, and it was another whitewash. And they even proved and showed that the FBI had hidden and evidence and obstructed justice. And no one ever got in trouble. No one ever gets in trouble. 1,100 IRS agents have recently been found to be cheating on their taxes. What happened to them? They got bonuses. Every single one of them got bonuses. And yet Nancy Pelosi says that we can't cut any money anywhere out of the federal budget.
Well, they're cutting the IRS budget substantially today.
Well, I wish they would. They should abolish the IRS.
Well, yeah. So then how are we going to pay for our army?
Oh, no, we need the IRS. How would we ever pay our taxes?
Seriously, how are you going to pay for an army?
Not having a strong-arm, Gestapo-like organization to come out and collect taxes is not meaning that we still aren't going to pay some taxes in this country.
You want to go to a consumption tax?
You make a fair and simple tax that isn't so convoluted that not even IRS agents can follow it.
Yeah.
You have a simple, fair tax. That is the same for everybody in the country, including corporations, just a graduating, simple percentage.
But you want
a
progressive
everybody.
Tax. You want it to go up as income
well,
goes up, as Thomas Jefferson suggested.
I don't think somebody making $15,000 a year should pay as much as somebody making $150,000 a year.
Yeah. Okay.
You don't graduate the tax, make it simple.
I don't disagree with you.
And why do we have that convoluted system? Why do we have that convoluted IRS
Because the
system?
Supreme Court said that,
no, because
that
Democrats
rich people can
and
buy
Republicans,
members of Congress.
Because Democrats and Republicans don't have the courage to stop this abuse in our country.
It's not a matter of courage. They are owned.
They might be.
We're talking of, you know, we're talking about the lapdogs.
Courage to stop being owned. Stop this horrible thing that's happening to American citizens.
Well, here's the thing.
Innocent people in jail.
As long as anybody, left, right, in between, it doesn't matter. As long as anybody with enough money and enough commitment to spend that money can come in and buy a congressional race, which is what's happening virtually every district in this country, it's either being bought by Republican interests or Democratic interests. As long as that is the case, this corruption of the United States of America is going to continue.
From both parties.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes. You got another caller we want to have yell at me?
Okay.
Love callers.
Okay. Yeah. Here's Chris in Darlington, South Carolina. Hey, Chris, what's up?
Well, you and the sheriff aren't talking about the same thing I called in about.
Well, that's fine. You can change the subject.
Okay. About the rewriting of history by the victors. I mean, the first big rewrite was after the Civil War. I mean, you keep referring to the Boston Tea Party. The first Tea Party was actually in Charleston, South Carolina. But that was removed from all the history books after the Civil War.
Really?
Obviously
when and where was that?
I think it was about 3 months before the Boston Tea Party.
So it was in the summer of 1773. Was that was it also an opposition to the British East India Company? I'm guessing it pretty much had to be, right?
Yeah, it was. But the Bostonians did it as a copycat event. I mean, if you read current history books, you'd think the entire revolution.
Well, if it's not in any history book, how'd you find it?
That's a good question.
You can still find some old history books published pre-Civil War in some libraries in South Carolina.
Yeah. So how do you know which book to trust?
Yeah. And
you should only trust the books I write
Chris.
Tom Hartman writes. And you can get my books at cspoa.org.
Okay. Thank you, Chris, for the call. Dan in Tracy City, Tennessee. Hey, Dan, you're on the air.
Hey, thanks for taking my call, Tom.
Sure.
I think it's time that America stood up and took the country back away from the politicians. And the only way I see this happening is to have a nationwide strike. I don't think it's going to happen because the economy is so bad and people.
What would we be striking?
He means like don't go to work.
Don't
you know,
vote.
Shut down the economy.
Oh
yeah, don't vote. It makes me crazy when people say that.
I won't stop voting.
Yeah. Here's the problem, Dan. You know, if you want to put together a way to subjugate
subjugate
a people, strip them economically.
Yeah, right? Because if we went on strike nationwide, that's going to hurt Americans, and not the politicians are going to keep getting their money.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And you know, starting in 81, really, you know, when we flipped our economic system here in the United States,
but towards his point,
wages have collapsed.
Yeah, towards his point.
Yeah,
I'll say this: why aren't people flocking to the third parties that already exist? We have several third parties in this country, and I can't believe that people aren't flocking to them.
Because people correctly see voting for a third party as shooting themselves in the foot. I mean, I asked the question, you know, back in 2009.
What do you call continuing voting for Republicans and Democrats?
Well, in 2009,
shooting yourself in the heart.
You had some very wealthy people who funded a series of CDs about how to basically show up at your local Republican Party and become a precinct committee person and take over the local party. That went nationwide. These CDs were sent out. There was thousands of them sent all over the country. And that led to the Tea Party takeover. I'm saying the same thing needs to happen in the Democratic Party. We need to get people who are taking over the political parties show up, get inside, and have these parties have some integrity.
Follow the Constitution.
I love the idea.
Less spending. Get us out of debt.
Yeah.
And
those are all fine things. Those are all fine things.
That's all I've seen in the Tea Parties. Well, there's some Tea Parties that are just kind of money deals. You know, they're entertainers.
And there are some, particularly in the South, that are.
But I've been to 120 Tea Parties across the country and spoke at all of them, and I just saw people wanting freedom and government to leave them alone.
I wasn't criticizing them. I was saying the Democrats need to learn from them. So, anyhow, but that's, I think, working inside the political party is where we need to go. 28 minutes past the hour. We'll be back. Thank you.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
And Sheriff Mack's website, CSPOA, as in Constitutional Sheriffs and Peace Officers Association, CSPOA.org. Welcome back. 28 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you, and Sheriff Richard Mack in the studio with me, with CSPOA.org, which you as an individual can join, as well as peace officers. I wanted to bring up a topic with you that we have sort of talked about in the past, but I don't know if you. I'm guessing you probably haven't seen. Most people haven't seen this new movie about what's his name, the kid Ed Snowden, you know, who released all the NSA stuff.
Uh-huh.
And it's a really fascinating movie. It's called Citizen Four, which is how he signed his early stuff to Glenn Greenwald.
I'd actually like to see it. I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, it's a fascinating movie, and it's mostly him on camera. And when you watch that movie, basically what he says is that the apparatus of a genuinely oppressive state is in place. Mm-hmm. In China, for example, which is an oppressive state, if you say something that the government doesn't like, they don't necessarily or typically, you know, show up and kick your door in. What might happen is you might get an email from some senior official or from a law enforcement officer saying, oh, it's interesting that you said that on the air yesterday, or it's interesting that you said that on a street corner yesterday, or it's interesting that you said that in an email yesterday. Mm-hmm. It's their way of subtly saying, we're watching, look out.
Like the present government did to Cheryl Atkinson.
I don't know that story well enough to discuss it. Yeah. But you know,
I've written about it.
Yeah, right. I'll have to read it. But his point was that the apparatus of state oppression has been put into place largely since 9/11, in the last 15 years, last 12 years. And that we haven't had a president who has basically pulled the trigger. I wrote this book, The Crash of 2016, and I'm standing behind it. I think the stock market's going to fall apart. And one of the points that I make in the book is if you look back at 1932, 1933, that time period.
Yes.
We had FDR in the United States. Germany had Hitler. And we both suffered from the Great Depression.
Yes.
And our people in both countries were saying, damn it, do something. And Hitler built this massive army and this giant state security apparatus and moved in the direction of an oppressive state using, by the way, computers from IBM.
And FDR did the New Deal.
Which you may consider an oppressive state. I don't. You know,
It was.
Okay. But the fact of the matter is that we're going to have to make some simple choices. Are we going to become a more progressively more authoritarian state day by day? Are we going to use those instruments of state security against whoever seems to get in the way, whether it's me on the left or you on the right? Or are we going to start constraining them?
I hope we constrain them, and I hope the American people won't put up with any of this. But I believe that too many people in America are just too dumbed down. They're not involved in the process. They don't even vote. I mean, what is the percentage of Americans that actually vote? Not the ones that are registered. Only about a third of Americans are
10%.
Even registered.
Yeah.
And then the ones that actually vote in America, you're right, 10 to 12, 15%, yeah. maybe, yeah. if we're lucky.
Yeah.
And so we're a dumbed-down society. We're not involved in the freedom process. And the founding fathers, especially Jefferson, said, if the American people are not vigilant, if we're not involved in the process, if you expect to be ignorant and free, you expect what never will be. That is the biggest indictment against the American people. Our politicians are so corrupt and so out of control. I totally agree with you, Tom, that the economy is going to fall. I have said the exact same thing, that this economy will not last 8 years of the Obama administration. It will collapse before he leaves office.
Yeah, I think so, too. And but, you know, probably for different reasons. But I'm
whatever
just looking
it is,
at the structural
it's
stuff.
So corrupt and it can't
last. But the question is, what happens when that happens? I mean, this you go back. You talked about our media. You know, we used to have laws, rules, mm-hmm. these god-awful regulations mm-hmm. that said that if you are a rich guy or a big corporation and you want to own a radio station, you can't also own a television station and you can't also own a newspaper. You have to pick. And because we don't want the media of one town
monopolized
to be owned by one voice. Right.
Yeah.
And Ronald Reagan stopped enforcing that law, the Sherman Antitrust Act in 1982. Mm-hmm. And Bill Clinton signed the Telecommunications Act in 1996, which totally blew that stuff up. And now you've got basically five companies that control over 90% of all the media. You've got 18,000 magazines controlled by 11 companies.
But what would be the problem if you wanted to own all three? And would you really expect government to stop you from owning
yes.
three businesses?
I want that to happen.
See,
yes.
I don't trust government with that. I don't trust them with any of these
jewels. I don't trust the guy who owns all the media.
But I don't okay.
Do you? Do you trust NBC?
Oh.
Do you trust Comcast? Do you trust CBS?
Hell no.
Okay, then why do you want them to control all of the media?
But you want me to turn to government and say, government, you take care of these people.
Richard, George Washington had three horses shot out from underneath him to create government. Government is supposed to be we the people. It's supposed to be us creating the world that we want.
To create government or get rid of oppressive government? He got rid of oppressive government. That's the reason the Revolutionary War was fought. And that's the reason we're in so much trouble today. We have too much government. Jefferson said, all bad government is due to one principle and one principle alone, and that is because we have too much government.
I believe that that's a David Barton quote.
$18 trillion in debt to provide us all this wonderful, idiotic, corrupt government.
Yeah.
That's where we're at.
Yeah.
And it cannot continue.
My point is that
economically, I mean that. It will not continue.
No, I don't disagree.
And
correct. I don't think that our national debt is going to kill us. I think that our private debt, we've got $54 trillion in private debt right now. And that's a
bomb. Well, you
mix
those two together.
Well, the sovereign debt, the government debt.
And if government debt is no problem, then why do we pay any taxes? Because they can just go in more debt and leave my money alone. Don't take any taxes from any American citizen, especially ones that are poor like me. I could have 3 years ago when the housing market really crashed, maybe 4 years ago, I had to pay $8,000 in income tax with me and my wife, federal income tax.
Right.
I had two sons that lost homes. All they needed was $4,000 each to get their loans caught up and to keep their homes. My government gave money to AIG and GM and Chrysler and would not allow me to keep $8,000.
Right.
To help my sons keep their homes.
This is the story of working Americans all across this country.
Yeah.
And this, you know,
that's no different, no matter if it's a Republican or Democrat in there. I don't get to keep my money, but we'll give that money that I could have given to my sons to keep a home, to keep the American dream.
Then why take it and give it to AIG. Then if you think there's no difference between the parties, why is it that this piece of legislation that is going to probably pass in 20 minutes in the mm-hmm. House of Representatives that says that it was literally written by a Citigroup lobbyist that says that these guys can gamble in the derivatives market with depositor funds, with
right.
our money, without our permission or knowledge. And if it crashes, the government, we the people, will bail it
out. Yeah.
And, you know, why
that's
is
absurd.
It that is
and
exclusively,
that's absurd.
It's
and
exclusively
it's
promoted by the Republican Party?
It's supported by both parties.
No,
let's
it's not.
Get real.
There are no Democrats who support this.
This legislation, they've
yes.
done it in the past. Who's done all the bailouts? The bailouts are no different.
The setup for the crash happened in 1999 and 2000 during the Clinton administration. Yeah. Bill Clinton signed Gramm-Leach-Bliley. Bill Clinton signed the Commodity Futures Modernization Act. You're right.
Both parties, but
they were promoted.
Cater to the money corporations.
But I would submit to you that the Democratic Party, or at least some people inside the Democratic Party, at least the Progressive Caucus, are waking up to this. No, they're not.
They're just opposing the Republicans.
No, this happens way too much.
The Patriot Act, it was supported by Republicans. Okay, then it got supported by Obama, and it got reinstated by the Democrats.
Right, it's
a disaster. And the Democrats were assailing the Republicans for doing that because it was so unconstitutional. Both parties do it. Why do we have $18 trillion debt? Because both Democrats and Republicans did it and still do it. Why do we have an out-of-control criminal IRS? Because both parties allow it. Why do we have the EPA out there destroying property rights of citizens? Why do we have them destroying jobs, economy? Why do we have a president of the United States who now is offering amnesty? Who's amnesty going to hurt? Will it help ghettos? Will it help black children looking for jobs? Will it help teenagers looking for jobs in poverty-stricken areas of America?
Actually, it could.
It will never help them.
No, it could, because when you no longer have an illegal workforce, what the illegal workforce does is it creates a floor below the floor.
Those 5 million people are going to be vying for the same jobs, whether we like it or not.
But they will be paid at least a minimum wage, rather than being paid $2 an hour.
Oh, and the government enforced minimum wage on businesses.
Absolutely.
That they have no business to tell me how to run my business.
They absolutely do.
They have never.
First of all, we've got to change our language here. The government is we, not they.
No, because we already talked about that. 12% of the people vote. They do not represent the American people. Okay. In fact, right now, if we have a real democracy and Obama wants to do the will of the people, then he would get rid of Obamacare because 65% of the people don't want it. 68% of the people say the wrong direction.
Yeah. When you ask people if they want insurance companies to be able to kick people off their policies when they get cancer, do you want to go back to that?
No, I don't want any of that.
So you want the government to regulate insurance companies?
No, I don't want the government to
tell
me.
So you do want the insurance companies to be able to kick you off your policy?
I don't want government running my life and telling me how to live.
So when your insurance company says, Richard, sorry, you've got cancer, heart disease, we're not going
to
pay for it.
I can go to an insurance company and say, look, I want a contract that says that I keep my insurance.
And they'll tell you to screw yourself.
Then they're not going to get very much business, and it'll be a business opportunity.
And you get sick and you're going to die.
No.
Who are you going to turn to, Richard?
Because one, I turn
Who's
to my family.
Who's going to defend you?
Two, I pay my own bills now, and I'm not wealthy.
You can't pay your own bills.
I do not have insurance.
And
I'm not taking Obamacare because I'm an American citizen, and I don't have to. And this president is not going to force me to buy a product from an insurance company that we already know are all corrupt anyway. Yeah. And so I'm not going to say bow down to a king who says you better go buy a product that I say you have to buy.
Would you go with the Canadian system?
No, theirs is worse than ours.
But they have better
outcomes than
we do.
Our system was better before Obamacare. Our system
so back when insurance companies could kick people off their policies, was a good thing.
Go to a different insurance company when you first buy it. And when my employer
you're
gives
right,
it to me,
they're all criminals.
You're absolutely
We'll be back with Sheriff Richard Mack. Stick around.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
It's the Constitutional Sheriffs and Peace Officers Association, CSPOA.org. Sheriff Mack is here in town with. We'll be back. Welcome back. Oh, you've got to go? You got a boogie, apparently. I don't know. Where are they? We're back on the air, by the way. Oh, that's K and 19th. Yeah, if you got to be there 2:20, you want to leave right now. Okay. So, Sheriff Mack, it's great to see you.
Love you, Tom.
Thanks so much for dropping by.
Remind everybody that anybody can join CSPOA.
Okay, you got it. Yeah. In fact, I think you just did. You just reminded everybody. Okay, let's, if I can get my cursor back, there we go. Oscar in South Lansing, Michigan. Hey, where I grew up, South Lansing, Michigan. Hey, Oscar, what's up?
Hey, Tom, I listen to your show all the time. It's a great show.
Thank you.
I enjoy it. I just wanted to comment a little bit on the Arizona Sheriff's assertion. I agree with you that you know, I used to be a union rep, and I used to tell my members all the time, it's not the government, It's we, the government. If you only got out and voted, you could participate in this government, you know.
Right.
And I also believe that if there is a difference between Republicans and Democrats, if Democrats would start acting like Democrats,
yeah,
like FDR and Henry Wallace and people like that who were the leaders of the Democratic Party when it was actually a different party than the Republican Party.
Right.
It's not really a whole lot different anymore. You know, they called Bill Clinton a liberal. He was not a liberal. He was a Democrat from a deep South state who had some liberal principles, but he was definitely conservative in most of his fiscal policies, et cetera. So I'm really disappointed that Democrats don't act like Democrats. I live in the great state of Michigan. I never thought we would be called Michigan with M-I-S-S like Mississippi, because we're now a right-to-work state for less. And I never thought that would happen in the state where I grew up in and the state that I love so much.
Yeah, it's a pretty astonishing thing. It really and truly is. Oscar, thank you for your call, and thanks for your comments. Sylvia in Mountain View, Missouri. Hey, Sylvia, what's up?
Hi, Tom. How are you?
I'm well. How about you?
I'm well, thank you. Kind of got my thunder stole by, oddly enough, Sheriff Mack, and by your last caller. But this is my call as an American citizen and a voter. It is up to us as individuals, individual responsibility to vote and educate yourself before you vote so that you know you are voting for the right person. It all comes down to we run this country, but we have abdicated that authority and let the politicians take over. It is up to the individual voter to take responsibility, register to vote, and make an educated vote.
Yeah.
That's the bottom line here. And the information
I agree. Go ahead, Sylvia.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say our media is so densely controlled that people are getting infotainment instead of news.
Yes, but you don't have to rely on the media. You can go online and look at the voting record of any congressperson anytime you want.
Yeah, and that's where the Sunlight Foundation is so useful. Sylvia, thank you very much for the call, and thanks for watching Free Speech TV on Dish Network. It's much appreciated. 10 minutes before the hour, we'll be right back. Ellen Rand, Talk Radio News Service, is going to drop by. Tom, I've been here with you. Let's check in on the news of the day with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com, brought to you by goatsfortheoldgoat.com, where you can give a goat to help a returning slave in South Sudan, and free-don.org. Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service on the line with us. Hey, Ellen.
Well, thank you. Goats and our hearts make wonderful Christmas gifts, so be sure and keep us in mind. And the hearts are made by women who have seen somebody killed in front of them, so that's a good gift, too. But interesting. I was just at the United Nations. I'm not in Washington today. We have our own reporters in Washington. But the Secretary General's spokesperson was asked about the torture report. And the Secretary General's spokesperson said, the Secretary General believes in accountability. This is the beginning of the process. Accountability is key, and that holding people accountable, if they ordered this kind of torture, is specifically, against it. They should be held accountable. And this is also from the special rapporteur, is what they call it at the United Nations.
Right.
And he also said, and this is really interesting, he said there is broad agreement against this in the UN system.
Right. Well, it's actually written into the UN Charter, torture is banned.
Absolutely, and we're signatories to this.
Right, and by the way, it's based on the Hague Convention of 1899, the first draft of which was written by Abraham Lincoln in April of 1863 as his rules of how the Union Army should deal with Confederate prisoners of war. And he specifically outlawed torture.
Of us for over 150 years.
Yes, amen.
Okay. Also, this is interesting. In South Sudan, there is a special representative of the Secretary General, a woman by the name of Mary Ellen Loy. She says the patient is wearing thin with the peace talks, that there is now 1.5 million people in crisis for food insecurity, and it could go to 2.5 million people. Also, by the way, of the 38 countries that are experiencing food insecurity right now, 29 are in Africa. Now, although this will probably air again, so far there has not been a vote passed to, unless it happened in the last 10 minutes, passed to pass the budget. There is a lot more discussions. There are issues of the Financial Control Act. This is obviously Dodd-Frank. That is huge. And then there are the issue of political contributions. Now, according to what I'm understanding, there could be as many as $3.1 million that one individual couple could give to various political parties. In other words, you're limited in aggregate. Do you give the Senate campaign or gubernatorial or whatever? And this is also because, and the reason that they're so anxious to pass this, is because that $18 million that was part of the presidential money that went to fund a political campaign, political conventions, not political campaign. Well, it also went to fund political campaigns, but political conventions. Sorry for the noise. I'm in New York. That is actually, that was rescinded by the pen by President Obama with a bill. So now how are they going to pay for these conventions that they don't need to have?
Interesting.
The ones in, of course,
yeah, the big one. That's outrageous. But the big one is that we are giving a $1 trillion big wet kiss on the cheek or on the lips to all the big to basically seven banks.
Your banksters.
Maybe nine banks if you include Deutsche Bank and the British, a couple of British banks, and you know, the six big U.S. banks.
Right.
It's nuts.
So that is huge. By the way, the Secretary General is also today in he's in South America, and he is talking about climate action and sustainability. Now, there's some other really interesting thing that I think is going on now. This has to do with the expansion of the state voter ID laws. Representative Cummings, as you know, he's the ranking member on oversight and government reform, and he is very concerned about this. He would like the GAO, that's the Government Accountability Office, to really work on this issue. Now, there's a Harvard Law School report on voter ID, and it says the expenses for documentation, travel, and waiting time are significant. We're talking about people who need to show their voter ID, especially for a minority group and low-income voters, typically ranging from about $75 to $175. We're talking about transportation, leaving work, all that kind of thing. Even when adjusted for inflation, these figures represent substantially greater costs than the $1.50 poll tax outlawed by the 24th Amendment in 1964.
Wow.
So, I mean, here you have it, that they're trying to do everything they can. And what they also are saying is that the minority voters were way down in this election. Surprise, surprise. And that's probably why the Republicans are so anxious to get these voter ID laws in.
Right. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Voter suppression works exclusively to the benefit, or largely to the benefit, of the Republican Party. And just as, you know, back when the Democratic Party was the party of, you know, segregation in the South, it worked to the benefit, the old poll taxes and the literacy tests worked to the benefit of the Democratic Party.
Right, if you want to call them Democrats, but okay.
Yeah. Well, they were, you know, before 1960, you know what I'm talking
right.
about.
Right. Also, in his letter to the Government Accountability Office asking for this study, they also talk about the dissent of Judge Ruth Bader Ginsburg. This was a Texas law, as you know. She said it may prevent more than 600,000 registered Texas voters, about 4.45% of all registered voters, from voting in person. Now, you know, it's interesting that voting is often like a basketball game. They're often within 4 to 5 points.
Mm-hmm.
So when you take a look at 4.5% of voters, and you look at somebody who might get 46% of the vote, and that 4.5% could put them over to the 51% category. That's really extraordinary.
Yeah, yeah, it is.
So this is absolutely huge. The other interesting thing, that just go back to this presidential funding law and what happened with why they're going to allow not only the banksters to make money on this this budget, but also the people to give just unconscionably, is this was part of the Gabriel Miller First Reach Act, and it was to essentially pay for medical research. And so how they paid for it was getting rid of the taxpayer subsidy.
Ellen Radner, thank you.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey, friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com. Providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com. Total protection. Quicken Loans. Engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Dick Cavett's on the line with us, former TV talk show host, The Dick Cavett Show, author of several books, including his most recent Brief Encounters, the website DickCavettShow.com. Dick Cavett, welcome to our program.
Well, Tom, it's you at last.
It's a pleasure and an honor to have you with us. I love your book, Brief Encounters. I loved your story of Liz Taylor showing up when you were doing a magic trick. I love your story. It's just
how many people can say that?
Yeah, really. And your characterization of the kind of sad irony of the life that she and Richard Burton had. I that was remarkable. I've been reading your columns for years, and this is just a great compilation, great book.
Well, somebody said it's the kind of book they're always looking for, in the sense that, that it's the perfect bedside book. When you don't want to go to sleep right away, you want to read a little something, but you don't want to start War and Peace or Madame Bovary.
Yeah.
It's Mel Brooks. Well, did you notice Mel Brooks' blurb on the cover on the dust jacket? I think it's on the
back. Yes, the best bathroom reading ever written. Each story takes the right amount of time.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Took it from the bedside to the bathroom, but
yeah. Yeah, I was thinking that as you were saying that. You were rather famously, and you refer to it in the book, you say look up this YouTube if you want to know about this. You had the Richard Nixon the Nixon White House coming after you, did you not?
Yes, one of the great honors of my life parallels that of the late Paul Newman's, who said he would have traded all his Oscars for being on the Nixon enemies list. And I had the same feeling about the great unindicted co-conspirator.
Uh-huh.
And did a special, if you didn't see it, promise me you will. You can Google it. It was on PBS sometime back. Somebody noticed I had tons of Watergate on my show at the time, all the baddies, because I was obsessed, as everybody was, with it. You couldn't wake up and not run to find out the latest bit. As Gore Vidal says on this special, you had to get your Watergate fix right away each day. It became a really, really wonderful hour. I get only a little of the credit. But, it's strange to see... Several years ago, a guy flipped open a laptop in the back seat of a limo, and I thought, am I being kidnapped? What is this? There's Nixon with what I'm using an Elizabethan term called his lick-spittle H.R. Haldeman, in the Oval Office, plotting, and you can hear it. It's all there. And have you ever heard the most powerful man in the country say about you, as he did about me, Cabot, how can we screw him? That was our president.
That's chilling, actually, to think that a president would be asking that question of one of his subordinates about a private citizen.
Doesn't he have a better thing to do with the world than that? But the true honor, I only found out recently, is that I show up and haven't heard them yet 26 times in the Nixon tapes.
Wow.
They were frequently unhappy with me. Actually, once I was invited to the Nixon White House for an evening of Shakespeare and met the great man and his really wonderful wife. God, I loved Pat Nixon at one meeting. Mm-hmm. And he was his usual glib self. And as I stood in front of him in our mutual tuxedos, he said, who's doing your show tonight? And I said, Joe Namath, which is true, sitting in. And he said, how are his knees? And realizing I was not chatting with Oscar Wilde, I moved on to the next.
Yes. Well, and it's interesting.
Yeah, Nixon also, then when John Lennon asked me to testify that he shouldn't be thrown out of the country after my Lennon shows, the Nixon White House hated that, too. The other day, somebody called and said, we saw your great Dick Cavett's Watergate, but I got to ask you, do you feel sorry for him in any way? And I said, I admit I do. The poor man died never with an answer to his question, is Cavett a Jew?
My goodness.
Anti-Semitism was one of his most prominent features, as you hear all through the tapes.
Yes.
And as Carl Bernstein pointed out on an interview done just for this show, you'll see it on there, Carl Bernstein on the special follows right after Nixon's I knew nothing about this break-in. Bernstein said the day after the re-election, this landslide victory, instead of talking about all the nice things we can do for the country, it was how can we screw this guy? Let's wreck this guy's business. He didn't support us. You know? So you had, as Bernstein said, at that instant, a criminal president and a criminal vice president both. Stupid, yes. Spiro Agnew.
Yes.
And Nixon with a criminal streak as wide as his obsession about Jews and faggots and kike lawyers and so on.
Nixon's phrases. Yeah. Nixon's phrases from his tapes. Yeah. We're talking with Dick Cavett, and I read your op-ed in the book. I've read your screed about political correctness, and I get it. There's also a chapter in here where you talk about CBS, I think it was CBS, whichever network it was, where they said, you don't want to offend people. Well, actually, that was part of the one that was political correctness, was it not?
I think it must have been, yeah.
Yeah.
You've read it more recently than I have.
Yeah. Yeah, when I write a book and I go on talk shows, I have that same problem. I wrote that book a year and a half ago. I don't remember.
Well, rereading it because there's an audio book out also. People seem to love those because I do everybody's voice that I talk about. Or driving cross country. But I noticed how much obituary, in a way, there is in it. When Jonathan Winters died, and then Sid Caesar, and the great James Gandolfini, Tony Soprano, I just couldn't not write a piece about them.
Yeah.
And I'm happy to say they're not unrelievedly sad, though parts of them are, but people are glad that I was able to get into their things. I was lucky enough to know about them that other people don't know, and certain amount of humor. And now Mike Nichols has died, and it just never seems to be Dick Cheney.
Yeah, well, that's for shalom. You know, none of us are getting any younger, as they say.
Oh, I am, aren't you?
Well, there are some days when I definitely do. Yeah, yeah. Okay, I'll go along.
You're just talking to you.
Yeah. Well, thank you. We have about a minute and a half left, and I'm curious your vision, your thoughts on the state of politics in America right now.
Politics, as I said to a prominent political figure, Jerry Rubin of the Chicago Five, this is going back in history, he said, you should turn the show over only politics. And I said, Jerry, politics bores my ass off. And this is largely true today. I don't mean that it's not interesting to read about the CIA's sins and all of that stuff, but just politics for itself to me is a dismal subject. I'd much rather talk about meeting Stan Laurel in the book, or my two criminal childhood criminal behavior incidents in the book.
Yeah, you write about that. In fact, that's that chapter where you talk about the, you know, calling up the police department and impersonating your father's voice is actually it's a great example of white privilege as well.
It is, and it sounds like something that would be thrown out of creative writing class. A kid, a teen, and is sweating in a T-shirt in a phone booth, calls a policeman and says, "This is the boy, one of the boy's fathers," and so on. I had a deep voice then, and I could sound like an adult. But my wife pointed out this could have kept you out of Yale if it were today, because there's so many implications. As soon as they find any little glitch in your past, you're out.
It's true.
And if I'd been arrested for this criminal act that's in the book,
it might have changed your life.
You'd be talking to an empty phone now.
There you go. Dick Cavett, former talk show host, The Dick Cavett Show. DickCavettShow.com is the website. His new book, which is brilliant, is titled Brief Encounters, Conversations, Magic Moments, and Assorted Hijinks. Thank you, Dick Cavett, for being with us today.
Well, how do I thank you, Jake? How do I thank you? Tom?
Thank you.
Tom?
Yes, thank
this
you.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
We'll be back. Dick Cavett, his book, Brief Encounters. We'll be back. Fifteen minutes past the hour, Lee in Forestville. That's quite a contrast, you know, from Richard Mack to Dick Cavett. It's like whiplash. Lee, you're on the air.
Finally, thank you, Tom. Another great show.
Thank you.
I wanted to bring up a topic about how could the Republicans have gotten all those people from those devastated states that got Republican governors a few years ago get reelected along with senators after there was a landslide victory all across the country on progressive initiatives like minimum wage and medicinal marijuana, and all these Republican governors that refused to take federal funds so that all their citizens in their state could get on what they call Obamacare.
Right.
And now how did they get elected? You know, who would vote for progressive initiatives and then turn around and vote for a Republican governor or senator?
I, you know, Lee, you raise a really important point, and I am very hopeful that the speech that Chuck Schumer gave here in D.C. a week ago Monday was the beginning of a waking up process for the Democratic Party, because those Democrats who ran on progressive principles, who ran as I'm a progressive, you know, deal with it, they won. They won their reelections, or they won an election to a position, just like the ballot initiatives passed. Those Democrats, on the other hand, who said, you know, whether it was Allison Grimes in Tennessee or whether it was Mary Lander in Mississippi, who said, "Oh, you know, I'm a Democrat, but I don't really agree with the Democratic Party and President Obama," they lost. And what did Harry Truman say? You know, the American people are not idiots. If they're offered a choice between a real Republican or a Democrat who's behaving like a Republican, they'll take the real Republican every time. That's what happened, in my humble opinion. Lee, thanks a lot for the call. Ed, in Klamath Falls, Oregon. Hey, Ed. Yep. For some reason.
I'd like to thank you for having Sheriff Mack on TV. I thought he was just a crazed gun nut that was threatening the government. It turns out he's just a guy that wants to bring back the Republican Party of Eisenhower.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I don't know. I think that Dwight Eisenhower is probably too far to the left for Sheriff Mack, although he's not here, so I can't, you know.
Well, you know, if anybody ever does bring back the Republican Party of Eisenhower, I think I'll join them.
Yeah, there you go. I would, too. I would be very pleased to be a part of that. Ed, thank you very much for the call. By the way, Ed, my call screen software just locked up, and I can't move on to another caller right now. I'm going to have to do that during the break or something. And in fact, it's showing that Lee is still on. Are you still there, Ed?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, okay. So, what'd you think of Dick Cavett?
Yeah, something else I'd like to comment about. You talked about the Chinese tapping your email and going, "Well, we know you wrote that email." Well, I told you about the time my parents sent me off to Expo 67 in Canada because the FBI was coming to interview me.
Hmm.
That was they came to my high school and interviewed everybody that was in the anti-war movement. They were tapping us on the shoulder, telling us we're everywhere and we're watching you all the time.
Wow.
That was 1967.
That is not good.
I've never forgotten that lesson.
Yeah.
And I turned off my computer in the year 2000 because I was convinced that the government was going to use it to watch everybody all the time, and certainly they are.
Yeah, I think you're right. Ed, thanks a lot for the call. You're going to have to hang up because I can't. And we'll talk again. We'll be back. It's 20 minutes past the hour. Past the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. John Brennan, the director of the CIA, giving what appears to be some variation of the Lincoln-Douglas debates on CNN. It's very rare that you see these cable networks, you know, hold on one person for this long. This guy has been talking for at least 20 minutes. And, you know, of course, I mean, if you were looking at the possibility of going to prison for committing wars against humanity, for committing torture, I would guess that you would be dancing your, I certainly would be, you know, dance your feet off or whatever the phrase is, to dance your heart out, to try to avoid prosecution. It's just, it's really, well, here, the director of the United Nations, actually there's several. Wow, this is a second one. UN Secretary, this is from ABC News. UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon hopes the U.S. Senate Intelligence Committee's report on the CIA's harsh interrogation techniques at overseas facilities is, quote, the start of a process toward prosecutions. Ban Ki-moon! Because, quote, the prohibition against torture is absolute, end of quote. Now, Zaid Ra'al al-Hussein, the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, says it is, quote, crystal clear, end quote, under international law that the United States, which ratified the UN Convention Against Torture in 1994, that would have been while Bill Clinton was president, now has an obligation to ensure accountability. Tell me when I can open the software again. Yes? Okay. Great. So now, yesterday it was the UN Special Rapporteur for Torture, who was saying, okay, you guys, you've committed a crime, you've now admitted to the crime, let's hold somebody accountable. Let's start prosecuting people. And it was just the guy who's in charge of torture. Now it's the head of the UN. So what are they going to do? You know, on Meet the Republicans this Sunday, they're going to bring out Mr. Mustache. Blow off the top 10 floors of the UN. John Bolton. Yeah. Are they going to bring John Bolton back? You know, it's National Hate the UN Week. After all, they want to put our good CIA director in prison. Jeez, he's still talking. And he's still on CNN. They haven't found a car chase to go to. It's amazing. Well, by the way, when we were in Portland, Oregon for Thanksgiving, you know, you get together with your family, you hang out, you do things like, you know, we played a couple of board games. We played a strategy board game. We played charades. Honestly, it's with my kids, you know, and my mother-in-law. And we also watched a movie. We also watched TV. One night we were just all pooped, you know, and we just said, well, let's just watch a movie. And so, you know, we took a vote and ended up watching Anchorman 2. And I got to tell you, I was astonished. I was expecting a really stupid movie. And instead, it was about how this guy, what's the actor's name who played Ron Burgundy is? Oh, it's Will Ferrell. That's right. How Will Ferrell's character, Ron Burgundy, invented infotainment instead of news. And it did happen back in the 80s. This takes place during the Reagan presidency, which is when infotainment began, because Reagan stopped enforcing not just the Sherman Act, but also the Fairness Doctrine. And so networks no longer had to produce news. They could put any old junk they wanted on television, and people would watch it. And so Ron Burgundy says, oh, let's, instead of giving people what they need to know, let's give them what they want to know. Where's their car chase? Oh, there's a car chase right there. Let's put it on TV. And the people around him are going, what are you nuts? You don't put car chases on TV. He's like, yes, we do. And pretty soon, you know, everything, you know, his competitor was interviewing Yasser Arafat. And nobody was tuning in because everybody was watching the car chase. And it was really, really thought-provoking movie, which totally astonished me. So anyhow, all that said, my call screen software is working again. Mary Jo in Minneapolis, listening on AM 950. Hey, Mary Jo, what's up?
Tom, I'm sort of panicking about this rider with the omnibus bill on pensions.
Right.
First of all, John Klein, our representative here, is the one who tacked that on. I want to say that Colin Peterson, our Democratic representative, John Klein is our Republican one, our Democratic representative said voting, he's going to vote against the omnibus bill because it could cut pensions by as much as 50%.
Right. Well, what Peter DeFazio said, what Congressman DeFazio said on this program about an hour and a half ago, was that there are a number of large pension funds that are on the verge of bankruptcy. And probably, this is the question that typically is not asked, and I don't know the answer to it, but I would guess that these were pension funds that had invested in the big banksters' derivatives trades. And because they were selling these derivatives to pension funds like there's no tomorrow, and they got screwed. So you've got a bunch of pension funds who are about to go out of business, where people are going to see their pensions go from 100% to zero. And so the compromise was, well, let's give them half. Let's backstop them to the tune of half.
That's why unions are supporting this?
I don't know. Congressman DeFazio simply made the point that the guy who was actually most aggressively promoting this was a progressive Democrat, or not necessarily progressive, but was a labor-friendly Democrat who wanted to make sure that these pensions didn't go away altogether. So, you know.
So when John Klein claims that he's protecting pensioners, are you saying he is?
He actually may be. Now, you know, protecting a pension and cutting it in half don't seem to be consistent unless the alternative is to cut it to zero, which is apparently what's about to happen. And DeFazio specifically mentioned the Teamsters Pension Fund, and the guy that he mentioned was a big proponent of labor. I'm sorry, I don't remember the guy's name, the member of Congress who's promoting this. So George Miller, thank you, Shane. So, you know, it may be that there was some union influence in this too. I just don't know. I don't know enough about the details of it, Mary Jo. But I'm very concerned about it. If we're talking about bailing out banks at the rate of 100%, we should at least talk about bailing out pensioners at the rate of 100%. Thank you for the call.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
And thanks, Mary Jo, for listening to AM 950 in Minneapolis, Minnesota's Progressive Talk. We'll be back. Okay, here's what I know about the pension changes, and this is mostly gleaned from an article by Michael Hiltzik in the Los Angeles Times day before yesterday about this pension change that has been built into this piece of legislation that is currently before the House of Representatives awaiting, apparently, a vote. In fact, could one of you guys check the New York Times and just see if the vote has happened yet? So it applies to multi-employer pension funds. So it's not a, you know, if you've got a pension from one company, this doesn't apply to you. There are about 14. These are typically pension plans because they cover several employers. They're typically ones that are either run by or negotiated by unions. There's about 1,400 of these plans covering around 10 million people. But of that 1,400, somewhere between 150 and 200 of them are way low on cash. This is about 1.5 million people. They're seriously underfunded. And sometime in the next 20 years, they could go bust. So to prevent that from happening, they're saying that with a vote of active workers and pensioners, they can cut benefits. Now, the problem with saying with the vote of active workers and pensioners is that you're going to end up with the pensioners fighting with the workers. That's a prescription for a mess, number one. Number two, and Congressman Miller from California, George Miller, the co-author of the amendment, said this may mean some benefit cuts, but it may mean a plan that will last another decade or even longer. The House is in recess? Oh, very interesting. Shano tells me that the vote on the congressional budget has been postponed. I think it's because enough people's lines are lighting up from people both on the right and the left. And, you know, so we'll see. Anyhow, the Teamsters, I mentioned the Teamsters before. The Teamsters have actually come out in opposition to this, as has my dad's old union, the International Association of Machinists. They're opposed to this. So we'll see where this goes. Time will tell, right? Denise in Chicago. Hey, Denise, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. I was listening to Sheriff Scott. No disrespect. I don't know his proper title.
Sheriff Mack.
And I don't want. I'm sorry.
His last name is Mack. It's Richard Mack, and his title is Sheriff Mack. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. And I don't want to take your conversation backwards, but he confuses me because he gets on a line of conversation that he's. I'm going, yeah, this is great. This is great dialogue from a person who obviously does not like President Obama and liberals. But then he regresses and he points and then he uses the Obama blaming for, you know, calling him a king when he should be putting the light on the fact that this has been going on for years across many presidents' administrations.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then he goes into I get so nervous when I talk to you because I want to be articulate. But
you're doing
the
great.
Immigration dialogue. And
uh-huh.
I saw a news blip on either on Link TV or CNN or whatever. Yeah, CNN. And Anderson Cooper was interviewing a newsman from Mexico. And on the bottom on the crawl, the Chiron crawl, it said, Obama clashes with Mexican newsman over immigration. But then in the conversation, even the newsman said, why are we shedding light on my conversation with Obama when the real problem is the fact that your Congress and government can't even follow your own rules to take it to the floor and make a vote on it? So I get very confused by this gentleman. I want to understand him, but he always says great things and then he flips around and then takes the talking points from the far right. So
I know.
Can you help me understand that?
The question is like, you know, where are people like Sheriff Mack coming from? I he's not here. And I can't speak for him, but I can tell you
exactly.
That there is a large cohort of Americans who have been pickled, shall we say. And again, I'm not talking about Richard Mack here. He's not here to defend himself. I don't want to personalize this, but there is.
I didn't either, too.
Yeah, no, that's fine. And you did a great job. But there's a large cohort, there's a large group of Americans who have been basically pickled in right-wing propaganda. And it's astonishing to me. I mean, there are lots of times, like on weekends or evenings or whatever, where I just want to turn on the TV and get the news. And CNN is not doing news because they're doing some documentary or Anthony Bourdain is, you know, eating the new shrimp in Thailand. And MSNBC is not doing the news because they're doing a documentary about what it's like to live in prison. And so what's left? Fox. And Fox is doing the news. And it's the news with a spin, but it's the news. And similarly, you drive through this country and unless you have Sirius satellite radio there, or you're in a major city, you know, where there's a progressive radio station, the vast majority of America has no access to any voices, political voices on radio other than right wing voices. And I think that, you know, I think Sheriff Mack and others like him just are living in this gestalt, in this world, and are, like I said, pickled by it. I think that it has corrupted their worldview, my personal opinion.
And I didn't want to, I wanted to talk when he was online, but I didn't get a chance because to your point, he can't defend himself, but I just get so encouraged and then they turn around like, you know, they're living in this bubble. I recommend Link TV. I recommend Link TV. They're getting better. And I think there's another on DirecTV. There's another European channel news that they tend to spin things toward a worldview. But it's interesting that you're right. We need real news. And so thank you. Thank you again.
Thank you, Denise.
I gain information from you and I'm learning and I'm trying to spread that around to my friends. So thanks for taking my call.
My pleasure. Thanks so much for calling. Mitch in Point Roberts, Washington. Hey, Mitch, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I'm just curious about the legislation. I think I know the answer to the question, but the question is, why couldn't Obama just use his line item veto?
Because he doesn't have one.
Why doesn't he have one?
Because it's not in the Constitution. Congress passes a law, the president either signs it or doesn't sign it. There are some states that have line item vetoes for their governors. There has been a discussion for years and years about the president having a line item veto. The general consensus, I think, of both parties is that that's too much power for one man to have.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, Clinton had it?
Used in the past, right?
Ah, okay. Shano just corrected me. He said the Congress passed line item veto, Bill Clinton had it, and the Supreme Court struck it down as unconstitutional.
The Supreme Court. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. There you go. Right. So I am no scholar on this topic. Shano apparently is, and I trust his knowledge. Mitch, thank you for the call. Christy in Genoa, Illinois. Hey, Christy, what's up?
Hi. Well, thank you for taking my call, and thanks for your show.
Thank you.
I was listening to the sheriff, and I similarly had some ideas as a previous caller. He seems to – I really didn't learn anything from him. In fact, most of the things I learned would refute a lot of things that he said. And I just got this feeling that he has these Alec talking points. So I'm reading this book by George Lakoff.
Mm-hmm.
It's Don't Think of an Elephant.
Right.
And it's really is helpful. And I think people that want to help move this conversation in this country – in the right direction, would be talking about things over and over and over again that are really important. Like when he was bringing up, you know, whatever that gun exchange was in Mexico,
Fast and Furious,
that had nothing
yeah.
to do with torture.
Right.
I mean, you know, to just throw up these things to try to discredit, you know, anything good or any progress that we can make is just a game.
Well, yes and no. Here's what I think is happening. On Fox News, they have done so many specials on Fast and Furious. They have done so many reports on Fast and Furious and portrayed it as some sort of criminal conspiracy out of the Obama White House, when in fact it was the continuation of a program that George Bush started. Barack Obama never even knew about it until after it was shut down. In fact, the head of the ATF didn't even know about it until it was shut down. But on Fox, if you're a guest on Fox News and you want to win an argument, all you have to do is say Benghazi or Fast and Furious. Or, you know, something like that, and immediately everybody goes, oh, yeah, I know what you mean. I mean, in those three words, Fast and Furious, is condensed this entire large vision of the Obama presidency as this incredibly corrupt presidency where they're willing to sacrifice the lives of American good American ATF agents and Mexicans, to that matter, as particularly Mexican law enforcement, you know, on the altar of what? I don't know. I mean, originally I think it was to try to stop illegal gun sales. And the NRA doesn't like that, of course. But I think that that people who get pickled in that worldview just don't, you know, they have become convinced that this is how you win an argument is by tossing something like that out.
It's just tossing. Yes, and that's exactly what I was thinking. And also, I wish our discussion could move to talking about some of the things that Thomas Piketty brought out in his book. And you know, there's just been such a trying to smear his thinking or his conclusions that he's drawn. But I wish we would have a discussion in this country about how much wealth right now is generated by reinvestment, and how much of our money is, instead of having workers, instead of having what hardworking people do, what fuels our economy. And we don't have this discussion. We're having, you know, we're having all these ancillary kind of conversations. And we really need to talk about, you know, because as we all probably kind of hate to talk about money, but I mean, that's what fuels everything.
Yeah.
And if we don't get our finances right, like with Alexander Hamilton in the beginning, I mean, he knew what he was doing, and we've gotten so far away from having a country that honors and rewards hard work. I mean, you never heard about people losing their pensions in the 50s and 60s.
No, no, it would have been, you know, like burning a church down. Christy, thank you for the call. Thank you very much. We'll be back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Indeed, the newly reinvented TomHartman.com, where you can make your own blog and post your own messages and drop into our free live chat room and say hi every day. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And This is interesting. Linda Joy in the chat room. This proposal would devastate retirees and their surviving spouses. Said Karen Friedman, Executive Vice President of the Pension Rights Center, a nonprofit group. The proposal would also torpedo basic protections of the federal private pension law. Yeah, that's actually, you know, ERISA was passed in, I think, 74, as I recall. You know, it was like during the Jerry Ford administration. And the ERISA, and I forget what the acronym stands for, Employee Something, you know, Retirement Something or Other Act. And the ERISA law says that once an employee negotiates for a pension and is granted that, you can't take it away. It's part of their compensation. It's deferred compensation, but it's part of their compensation. And what this proposed rider, this proposed amendment to this budget bill would do is carve a hole in ERISA for multi-employer pension funds. It allows ERISA to stand for single-employer pension funds, but for multi-employer pension funds, it carves this hole and allows them to reduce their benefits to their retirees based on a vote of their employees. So the people working now can say, yeah, we're going to vote to reduce the pensions of all these people who are retired. And there's something just fundamentally wrong with that. Anyhow, Steve, watching Dish Network in Clayton, Georgia. Hey, Steve, thanks for watching Free Speech TV.
How are you doing today?
Just great.
Just had two quick questions for you. The first one was, do you think that Bush should be tried for war crimes?
Should be, yes.
Well, what do you think, if they try Bush for war crimes, what do you think they're going to do to Obama for murdering American citizens overseas with drones?
Without judicial process. I think it's very problematic, and I think that the Obama administration should be very seriously considering the world is looking, and at the very least, let's create a judicial process around this.
Exactly, but they might be flushing themselves down the toilet.
Well, I don't know. It seems, you know, John Brennan just came out and gave this big long speech about how wonderful the CIA is. The White House said we stand behind Director Brennan. You know, there's an old saying, power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts, absolutely. I think over time, what happens is, as particularly presidents, after the military has gotten them to kill a few people, you know, would you please sit in the room, sir? May we pull the trigger on this person, you know, et cetera, that they basically, you know, sort of like the relationship between prosecutors and police and why police don't get prosecuted when they kill young black men. Or anybody for that matter. And that presidents end up aligning themselves with the centers of power within their branch of government. The executive branch of government encompasses the military and encompasses the intelligence apparatus and encompasses the police apparatus of the country. And this administration, in my personal opinion, has gone a little too far to the right. I really think, although, you know, Obama officially stopped torturing people. It's a great start, but yeah, I have a problem with his drone program. You know, and as a secondary thing. Steve, thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. We'll be back. It's 10 minutes before the end. Before the hour, occupying the media 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. Tom Hartman here with you and Chris in Bellingham, Washington, listening on KBAI. Hey, Chris, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how you doing?
Just great. What's on your mind, sir?
I have a comment and a question. My comment is on the omnibus spending bill and the move to reduce pensions.
Right.
Most of those pension trusts that are in the red probably won't go bankrupt for a decade or more.
Right.
And I belong to a multi-employer pension trust. I'm in a building trade union, and all building trade unions are multi-employer pension trusts. And so, I mean, that's one step toward reducing all pensions.
I agree.
And there's no need to do this right now. There are ways to make those pensions solvent and, you know, maybe some of them will go bankrupt. But
well, here's an amazing thing, Chris. In this same piece of legislation, there is one provision that says that if one of the big six banks in the United States is gambling on trillions of dollars of derivatives and it blows up in their face and they end up, you know, owing a couple hundred billion dollars or $1 trillion, that we, the taxpayers, will bail them out. And then there's another provision that says that if a pension fund gets screwed by banksters, buys derivatives, sees the value of their pension fund go down, which is exactly what's happened over the last 10 years. If a pension fund gets screwed by banksters, then their pensioners lose their benefits.
Yeah, they're supposed to be guaranteed by the government.
Right, I mean that's ERISA, 1974. And right. but I'm saying, just consider the irony or the insanity of the same bill protecting banksters, absolutely backstopping them. Whatever you guys do, we will fill in the holes if you lose money. And then saying to people who have pensions, who are in their 70s, who've retired, who spent their entire lives committed to this employer, and by the way, took less pay in order to have this pension, saying to those people, sorry, we're not going to backstop you. We only do that for Jamie Dimon.
That's correct. It's just one more way to keep the worker down.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And it's one more demonstration that this Republican House of Representatives is all about the billionaires and the banksters and to hell with the average working guy. Chris, thank you for the call. Charles in Atlanta, Georgia. Hey, Charles.
Hey, I just want to comment on, you know, the sheriff and, you know, all the things he said. And I just want to say, you know, I respect your points of view and the things you say, but I just have sometimes I question and say you are always quoting the so-called founding fathers as if they're like some sort of disciples from the Bible.
Right.
I mean, that guy was making all types of talking points, and I understand you probably didn't want to interrupt him because you wanted to make his point, but, I mean, you were kind of falling in the same trap, too, because you're quoting from the same source. He had mentioned something about, people get upset at the founding fathers because they're all white guys. Yeah, they were all white guys.
Yeah. Yeah.
The fact is that America has never been that, quote-unquote, perfect union that for, at one time, blacks were majority of the population. And so, you know, some caller later said that he thought that the sheriff was just trying to be like Eisenhower. And I don't know, Eisenhower in 1957 sent troops to Little Rock, Arkansas to fight for the rights of Americans to attend public school. I don't think that guy, that sheriff, would ever have done that.
Yeah, well, I can't speculate on his motives or what he would do or not do when he's not here. But that said, you know, you're right. When he went through this whole thing about, you know, the founding fathers were not racist and they were not sexist, I wanted to say, hey, wait a minute. You know, what about John Adams's correspondence with his wife when he was at the Constitutional Convention where she said, don't forget the ladies? And what about the fact that we had actual slavery in the United States and it was written into the Constitution, the whole 3/5, you know, counting people for representation and all that stuff? But, you know, he was going someplace else with it. And so it's going to happen in debates where somebody's dropping 5-6 sequential talking points on you and you can't rebut all of them. But Charles, thank you for calling up and pointing it out, because it was a glaring bit of whatever. Thank you very much. Ed in Belleville, Illinois. Hey, Ed, what's up?
Hi, I'm calling about the proposal to limit the multi-employer pension plans also.
Right.
You've really pretty much already covered this, but my take on it is, back when AIG and these big Wall Street banks were being bailed out by the federal government with federal dollars, Tim Geithner and the rest of those Wall Street people took the position that, hey, contracts are sacrosanct. We can't put any strings on this money. We have to let AIG pay their employees multi-millions of dollars of bonuses because that's a contract.
Right.
You know, we can't upset that contract. But a pension plan is a contract just like that.
Yes.
So why the disparity in treatment between the rich guys and people who have a contract to receive a pension?
Because we have a Congress.
The only explanation is class.
Yeah, it absolutely is class. We have a Congress, and race is a subset of class as well. But in this case, it's class. And the reason why is because you've got a Republican Party that's all about billionaires and banksters, and you've got and a few Democrats, you know, coming along the way. And but typically, you know, mostly Republican Party. And they are, you know, as I said earlier, I find it astonishing. You know, just it's like an obscene admission of guilt on the part of John Boehner that he is presenting for our consideration, a piece of legislation that both says to the banksters, if you gamble and lose, we will cover you, and then says to pensioners, if your pension administrator gambled and lost with the banksters, we're not going to protect you. And
I agree 100%. I mean, we're now insuring these ridiculous imaginary swap things that the Wall Street guys made up
right.
to make money, and they're totally speculative. They've already melted down the economy once, but now we're backstopping them if they melt it down again.
Right. Yeah, it's something fundamentally wrong with it, Ed. Thank you very much for the call. And, the vote has not happened, so we'll see where this one goes. It's getting interesting here. So be sure and tune in tomorrow. Thanks so much for being with us today for these 3 hours. And don't forget, democracy actually requires you to show up for it to work. One of the reasons it hasn't been working so well, most of us don't show up. So please, tag, you're it. I'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit TomHartman.com.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com. Providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com. Total protection. Quicken Loans. Engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com. Your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.